Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe on the Geek Show Podcast Network. We are what would you describe us as?
Animation.
We're a show about animation.
If it ends in Asian, we do it.
Really? Carnation? Do we do Carnation?
I've just realised that masturbation can be put into that.
Station. Do we do station?
Yes, we do stationary.
Death stationary. That's what we do. You can get your death protractor, your death note, your death biro from our death stationary. But we're not talking about that. Anyway, my name's Rob, and joining me today are the picturesque Tucky and the statuesque Mark.
Hi!
We're very arty all of a sudden.
Yes. One of you is picturesque, the other one's statuesque.
I will
at
not
the moment,
stand
I'm landscape.
Tucky.
I'm in landscape mode at the moment.
Whereas Mark is, what's the word? He's statuesque, which means he's kind of pale
chiseled.
And a bit stiff. And well chiseled.
But we're talking about animation, so are we statuesque that moves?
I don't know. If you're outside, you could be suitably weathered.
We could be like that. What's it called? Nightmare at the Museum with Ben Stiller in.
Nightmare at the Museum.
The third one wasn't very good. It was a bit of a nightmare to get through that one. Yeah.
Nightmare at the Museum is a totally different film. Also known as The Relic. Anyway, how is everyone this week?
I am good. It's the weekend.
Yay! Tucky, how about you on this week of politics? I am blatantly waving the red rag.
It's been one of them weeks where life has become as complicated as 2016, but we can plough through it because we are British and we have ample supply of Yorkshire tea.
For now.
But what happens when the tea runs out?
Until the Yorkshires get put back or something, or secede to Europe. I don't know.
No. We'll become part of Scotland.
With any luck.
Only if Nicola Sturgeon isn't in charge, because, my God, that woman is shifty.
I know. It's just like an underground mob boss that you don't want to cross. There's something about it. I mean, she's like, I'm an honest Scottish politician. I'll tell you straight and I'll tell you to your face. You know for a fact that she's got heavies doing the gruff work for her.
Yeah. Can you imagine her versus that Russian bird from Black Lagoon? Which one of the two would win in a fight?
I'm not Sturgeon quite sure, and that's quite worrying.
Never bet against a woman who's named like a fish.
Yes, okay. Anyway, starting us off then with the news this week. I think you found this story, didn't you?
Yeah, it looks like Netflix are trying to really tap into the 90s nostalgia, because following on the heels of Mystery Science Theatre 3000, I believe it's called.
Yep.
That's literally just returned, and they've just announced that Carmen Sandiego is getting a new animation project, along with The Magic School Bus.
Okay. Number one, Carmen Sandiego is a thief that no one can find, so I'm a bit curious as to how that's going to play out. Number two, this is Netflix doing a reboot of The Magic School Bus, so is this going to be like the gritty reboot? Because that seems to be the only reboot that everyone's interested in these days, is the gritty reboot.
Well, The Magic School Bus kind of would suit that.
Really? Have you watched The Magic School Bus?
Yeah, but it could do a gritty reboot. I mean, the bus will just be like looking like a Go North East bus. But
did you guys ever watch the College Humor trailer for Dora the Explorer, the live action movie, or the gritty live action movie?
I think I vaguely remember it. Like, it was quite some time ago, wasn't it? It must have been like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, because I thought that was hilarious.
It was really good. I love it when they do anything like that, though.
But a gritty reboot of The Magic School Bus, I'm just imagining it be a bit like that.
I'm just trying to figure
out. A bunch of kids trapped in a bus.
Yeah, travelling through time.
Well, Say, did the bus just go inside people's bodies, or was it just like everywhere in the universe? Because I remember the episodes where they go inside people's bodies.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he's the brain stem. You know, to stick your hand out because you'll end up killing them. And then there's like, I don't know, I can't remember if the Magic School Bus went to like different planets.
Yeah, it did. It went like, into space.
We're on the moon. And there was always that one little unimpressed kid who was sitting there going, it's only the moon.
Yeah, it kind of went everywhere. It was just like they just kind of did a different one each week. I think the most famous ones were like the dinosaur one and the body one. I vaguely remember PC game, like PC educational games. I want the Magic School Bus episode where they just don't leave Deptford bus station. They keep trying to, but they just don't.
An episode called The Magic School Bus Breaks Down.
The replacement Magic School Bus.
Searching time and space for searching space and time for a decent mechanic.
But yeah,
Miss, where's the bus to show? So, sorry, I just got on. It's been used as a metro replacement, kids.
So, 90s nostalgia Netflix. What do you guys think? Is it worth dipping into 90s nostalgia?
Yeah, no, why not?
No, it's not. Because you get generations like this that vote for Tories.
This
is what Carmen Sandiego left us with.
To be fair, Netflix have been pretty decent at reviving some of their old, like some of the older franchises. I mean, I'm not going to say that everything's been like absolutely amazing, but they have took a decent stab at it. So I think if they could do it right, then, yeah, I don't see there being much of an issue.
It's this whole thing these days where it's like you have to look to the past to go forward. But you can slowly see the evolution of the human species, like, decaying because of things like this. Because, like, oh, it was great in the 90s, let's reboot it. And there's an absolute plethora of people out there with new, fantastic, zany, weird, crazy ideas out there, and I mean, some of the stuff, it's like, wow, they would never put that on TV, but luckily the TV's, you know, it's not important anymore. We've got the internet. They'll put it on the internet. So, and yet big companies continually go back and like, oh, we'll reboot this, we'll re-release this, we'll do that like it was before, and I'm getting tired of it myself.
I'll be honest, I was tired of it a long time ago. As you said, Tucky, there are people out there who have these amazing ideas, right? And one of the things that I know is your imagination is like a muscle. If you don't exercise it, then it stagnates, it atrophies. So you end up with a bunch of unthinking people who keep thinking that the past was better than the present. I know so many people now who keep thinking that video games in the 90s were better than video games now. Or cartoons in the 90s were the pinnacle of cartoons and nothing good is released now. Yeah. I call them retro fetishists. It seems like they get a physical pleasure from thinking and believing that what they liked as a child is superior to just about everything else that could be released now. And do you know what the sad part is? A lot of those people are also Nintendo fans.
Oh yeah,
is this like indirectly like aimed at me? Like, because I've just like bought like loads of N64 games.
No, it's not aimed at you, Mark. If it was aimed at you, I'd say, Mark, you're a retro fetishist. And I'm not going to say that, but I will imply it.
I'm not bothered. I mean, I'm really enjoying some of the games I've picked up.
No, seriously, you bought a load of N64 games, but that's because you like the games. Right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, you'd do the same if it was PlayStation or it was an Xbox or whatever. If you liked the games, you'd basically buy them, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But there are people who don't want to play other video game consoles because they are so hardcore Nintendo fans. But Nintendo, take Mario for example. Mario only has two types of game. There are the 2D platformers and the 3D platformers. That's it.
They've got all the spin-offs, but yeah.
Spin-offs are spin-offs, but Mario effectively has two types of game. That's it.
Yeah.
You know? And Super Smash Brothers, okay, great. Everybody enjoys Super Smash Brothers. Everybody enjoys Mario Kart. But how many different versions of Mario Kart do you need before you realize that they're all pretty much the same game.
Yeah, but to be honest, I personally don't think that's just an exclusive Nintendo thing. I mean, really, when
it's not. FIFA is just like, let's not even mention FIFA. Sports games.
Yeah, but it's not even just that. I mean, it's like we're kind of are seeing like we're on like the fifth installment, actually sixth installment of Uncharted.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's not just a Nintendo thing, but I think Nintendo does get a lot more of the flack.
All I'm saying is that the people who really like kids' cartoons and they want to bring kids' cartoons back into the modern era, right? If you say to them, okay, you've got kids now, why don't you sit down and watch the cartoons from when you were a kid with your kids? Because you can buy them on DVD as box sets. You know, I bought Dungeons & Dragons and I sat and watched it with my nephew and he loved it. But do I want a new version of Dungeons & Dragons? No, because the old version was so good. And if the old version is so good, why do you need a new version?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's always the question. It's like, because one of the things I absolutely hate is when people turn around and say, well, put it, for example, Ghostbusters, when the one came out last year, and say, oh, no, it's ruined my childhood. It's like, no, your childhood is still there. You can go into more or less any DVD shop or go on Amazon and pick up Ghostbusters. It's still there. It's not ruining your childhood. It's just your childhood's still there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think a lot also, of this is identifying between what is your childhood and what is out now.
Plus, if that Ghostbusters ruined your childhood was crap.
Yeah.
If Ghostbusters played that much of a part in your life, then perhaps your life didn't really go that well.
Yeah. At the end of the day, companies are going to look at these older franchises and they're going to look at doing new versions and they'll put out polls and they'll see what the opinion is in general. And this is one of the reasons why we end up with new Ghostbusters movies and stuff like that. But the actual decent stuff, you don't really... I mean, there's certain things that you can't remake. There's certain things that you just can't touch. From when I was a kid, I don't think they'll ever do a new version of The Neverending Story, for example. I don't think they'll go back and do Willow again. Or...
Back to the Future is the one I always use because it's one of those ones where, like... I think for years they've said they don't want to do another one because it's just they're just fine with it the way it is. I mean, I know they did do like the spin-offs, like the cartoon series and the one or two other bits, but it's like, yeah, they kind of realised that, yeah, we don't really want to do this in the way that people will be happy with it, you know what I mean? So we'd rather just leave it, and it's a popular enough series where they can just re-release it over and over again and people will buy it.
Well, in terms of animation, look at the shows that have had reboots that have actually succeeded and become really popular, right?
Yeah, I'm just like thinking overall, it's like stuff that's had reboots that's became popular.
It's a very small list.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, the only one I could kind of think was maybe Blackjack. Young Blackjack was quite popular when it came up, but not many people really talk about it now.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about anime. I'm talking about cartoons in general.
Yeah, right? Well, I just meant cartoons in general, but that was one of the ones that kind of popped up in my head.
But, I mean, if you look at, say, The Turtles, right? Awful. The new versions of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are pretty crap compared to the original cartoon series, which everybody adores.
Absolutely. That's right. That infuriates us as well, because they've rebooted that again and again.
Yeah.
Well, it's not just that. There's a long list of, like, failed reboots. And it goes through everything from like Bagpuss all the way through to the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
Where they've tried to take a new modern angle on it and it's failed.
The new version of Danger Mouse, I've tried watching it made my eyes and ears bleed. It's awful. It lacks any of the humour and any of the charm of the original version.
I heard the new Thunderbirds is kind of okay, but I've never watched it.
Yeah, but. Okay is okay.
I'd rather have an okay one than a bad one, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's still a lot better than something that's absolutely appalling.
All I'm saying is, okay is, it's nothing really. Okay is, well done, you participated, but you didn't win anything, did you?
Well, true.
The reason why I'm so against the nostalgia fest that we have is because I want people to push themselves. I want them to be creative. I want them to put their ideas out there. I want these companies to back these people up. because they don't seem to realise that you can make more money by bringing out a new IP than you can by regurgitating an old one.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the problems that we'll do with Eater a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm fine if someone's like, if they're doing like a whole, I don't know, if they're doing like half-half, you know what I mean? Like if see some, I want to see, I'm going to use Netflix, if they announce like, I don't know, they're doing 10 new series of something and then this Carmen Sandiego and Magic School Bus is still part of that, then yeah, that's still, as far as I'm concerned, that's still fine. But it's like, because they are doing it in moderation, you know what I mean? As opposed to just making it, rebooting everything.
We do have something that kind of epitomizes the Nostalgia Fest at its worst, right? And we've all seen the trailer for it. It's Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, I just can't understand why that exists.
Yeah, it's directed by Spike Brand, who is probably not going to work again as a director after this, I assume. It looks awful.
It looks absolutely gory, terrible.
I'm quite surprised because I thought Tom and Jerry was one of the ones where they were more protective of that series than some of the others. I know it has had a few bad ones in the past, but I kind of thought since then they were kind of a little bit more protective of it.
No. Basically, what Warner Brothers did with Tom and Jerry, they did the same thing with Granny, Tweety Pie, and Sylvester the Cat. They basically got them dolled up. You know, put them in these really revealing outfits, got them hooked on drugs and sent them out on the streets to haul themselves out.
It is. It's the prostituting the characters out and makes the Jetsons makes the WWE look like plausible.
Yeah, I know. That's literally what they've done. They basically, these characters are getting hauled out left, right and centre. It's, and I hate to put it in those terms because these are characters I literally grew up with, right? There are certain characters they haven't touched. Speedy Gonzales, for example, because racially insensitive jokes are still racially insensitive, even if they are jokes.
Same for Pepe Le Pew as well.
Yeah, also, but Pepe Le Pew they have to be careful with because Pepe Le Pew is basically the quagmire of Looney Tunes.
Exactly, yeah. Back in them days, it was still kind of... Yeah, in fact, that's something that they've actually done, isn't it? That they've started putting notices on like the stream and stuff, saying like, "Yeah, some of this stuff is actually racially insensitive." It was then, and it still is now.
Exactly,
which is pretty cool.
But the thing is, Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, it'll have the classic Gene Wilder songs from that version of the Roald Dahl story, and so it's got those, and it's apparently a semi-adaptation.
So really I think what they're trying to do is just remake it with Tom and Jerry.
Then just remake it with Tom and Jerry. You don't need to do a semi-adaptation of an adaptation of a children's book.
Yeah, I just can't see the point of it, except money.
It is literally just money.
Well, it's not getting my money, I'll tell you that now. I've seen that, I mean, the trailer, like you say, the semi-adaptation angle that they're going for, it's basically... You're taking Tom and Jerry and you're sticking them to the side of the movie. It's like you might as well just put Shia LaBeouf doing "He's Just Do It" in, and then semi-adaptation. Oh my God. That's all they're doing, the Shia LaBeouf in it.
No. I've just realised Spike Brand, his approach to directing this is basically to have Tom and Jerry photobomb the original movie.
That's basically
all I could see from it.
That's literally what he's done, isn't it? He's just said, right, okay, in this scene, we're going to have Tom and Jerry over here.
But it's just... I mean, I can understand that they want to try and do more stuff with these characters, but it's just like, stuff like this isn't the way to go.
If you're going to do more stuff with the characters...
Really not just do more stuff in the vein of the original series.
No, because people have short attention spans now, and even though we have this nostalgia fest going on, if you've noticed, it's limited to certain things, right?
Yeah.
It's always limited to certain key things. People are nostalgic about stuff like The Turtles, Thundercats, Transformers, certain Nintendo properties, Zelda, Mario, that sort of thing.
Final Fantasy,
yeah. Certain comic book characters, and a few other kids' cartoons, and that's basically it, right? But if you speak to these nostalgia fans, they won't be nostalgic about Dungeons & Dragons, the cartoon, or the Conan cartoon. or anything like that, or Ulysses 31 or Mysterious Cities of Gold, because the other two, the last two, Ulysses 31 and Mysterious Cities of Gold, they probably haven't watched because they're too young.
Yeah.
Because I hate to say it, but most of the nostalgia people are millennials.
Yeah, I would say that.
Kind of longer nostalgia being ruined. The Money Supermarket advert with He-Man in. Yeah. Skeletor. Oh, that God. Is... You're so Money Supermarket, Skeletor.
I want to find whoever did that advert, and I want to walk up to them and say, hey, well done with that advert. Now here's your reward. And take the bolt cutters and... Because as much as I didn't like the pithy message at the end of He-Man, you know, hey kids, remember, stay in school, don't do drugs.
Oh yes, them classic 80s things.
Yes,
like Sonic. If anybody touches you, don't let them.
Can you imagine if they did those as the modern gritty reboot?
Broadchurch beat Sonic the Hedgehog.
No. So you got He-Man going, remember, kids, always use protection. And then gives the wink and the gun.
It doesn't matter who you sleep with. Nothing's safe. He-Man!
It just sounds like something from Robot Chicken. In fact, they probably did that.
I don't think they did.
Oh.
Anyway, let's leave that to one side and move on to Disney, because Disney is a thing.
Disney will always be a thing.
Now, I watched an interesting documentary about Disney the other day, and it was talking about how Walt Disney started off and how he became an animator, stuff like that, which is, some of it was stuff I didn't know, most of it was stuff I did know, but it was still interesting and nice to see. But anyway, the Walt Disney Company owns most of the planet in terms of the entertainment industry at the moment. And you'd think that they'd be a bit more stringent about checking what they're actually putting out into the world. But we know that Disney is notoriously lax on that sort of thing as well. So there is a version of Beauty and the Beast that is being sold at various Disney parks and on the Shop Disney Parks app, and it's designed to mimic the VHS tape cover of this movie. Now, the blurb on the back literally reads, "A modern movie masterpiece, Disney's Beauty and the Beast waltzed away with the Best Picture Award, the first ever for an animated film." And this film is from 1991, but the issue has been raised because apparently Silence of the Lambs won the Oscar for Best Picture that year.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. It's like, I mean, I don't know if it's just in the videos. I probably should have picked up my copy of Beauty and the Beast to see if it's actually on the Blu-ray or anything like that. But it's like one of those weird things that Disney seems to like to embellish the truth on some of the stuff and like stuff like this. I mean, this is a little bit more major, but I mean, I know on a lot of the Disney ones, as soon as the Blu-ray comes out of, say, Moana, they'll turn around and say, oh yeah, this is like Disney's, like, I don't know what number they're on, 60th classic. And it's like, it's a classic. It's only been out for like 2 days, you know. I'm sure this isn't the first time they've said something like this and they've been kind of called on it.
Yeah, I mean, they're not really saying it's a proper false claim. What it looks like someone's done has taken the what was written on the back cover of the original VHS, and they've basically done an editing job on it, but kind of messed up with the editing job, and it's come out like this.
Yeah.
Because Beauty and the Beast was nominated for a Best Picture Award in 1991, mm-hmm. and it was the first animated film ever nominated for a Best Picture Award. It didn't win because Silence of the Lambs is still Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. It's weird how much Beauty and the Beast is like Silence of the Lambs. And it would have been a dead giveaway if at some point the Beast walks up to Belle in the prison and says, it rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Doesn't say that.
That's a different version of the Beauty and the Beast, that.
Yeah. That was the Silence of the Beauty and the Beast. So, yeah.
I can only assume they were supposed to see it and was nominated for this, and then they kind of just said, took out the nominated for and just said, including this.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that if Disney get away with this scot-free, and I do hope they do, right? I think if they just do a public apology for it and they walk away and there's no harm, no foul, I want that to happen, because then all the bets are off. Then Tucky could be... Tucky could have the Oscar.
Sonny Kons won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, Tucky could have the best the Oscar for best cinematography.
All us out on it and say, "Oh, sorry, my bad."
Yeah, yeah. We could all be Academy Award winners of some sort.
Monthly Tucky Con is on cinemas nationwide.
Yes, I could have the Academy Award for best grip. No, because that is an actual thing. They've got Grip, and then they've got Best Boy, and I always wondered what Best Boy was.
What does a Best Boy do? Is it just like, oh, you've done something good, you're my Best Boy?
It'd be nice if you said that in a less creepy way, Tucky.
Creepy's the only way I know how.
It's just one of those things. I suppose it's one of those things where just kind of like... it'll just be anarchy. And to be fair, there is a lot of, like, awards where they're just, like, proper random anyway, and they go to random things. But I kind of hope that they just apologise for it and say, yeah, we're sorry, our bad, we'll remove it, or something like that.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I want that to happen, because then we can all do the same thing. And if they complain about it, say, well, we're sorry, it was completely accidental, we didn't know it happened, even though we do. We didn't know it happened, no harm, no foul. If they try to press charges, just sit around and say, well, Disney got let off with an apology.
Disney did it.
Exactly. And how many times have people got off with that one line, Disney did it?
Not many.
I learned it from Disney.
I locked this girl in the dungeon. She fell in love with me. Disney did it.
Yeah, that's not... what's that syndrome you get?
That's Stockholm Syndrome.
That that's not Stockholm Syndrome much, is it?
The story of Joseph Fritzl became all of a sudden a Disney classic.
Yeah. And the scary thing is that film has inspired so many other things as well.
Yeah,
Joseph Fritzl won, or Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast. It's just one of those amusing little things. It's like, will Disney get away with it? Find out next week.
On in Carmen Ukraine. San Diego. I just want Carmen San Diego to just appear in every Disney movie from now until the end of time. Just like
I want them to have a Carmen San Diego Where's Wally crossover.
No. That's the old joke. If Carmen San Diego and Wally had a kid, would that kid be invisible? I just want Carmen San Diego to basically be like a photobomb in various scenes in Disney movies from now until the end of time. Just some rogue animator just painting Carmen Sandiego in. But the thing is, Disney can't find who the animator is because you can't find Carmen Sandiego.
Did Disney own Carmen Sandiego?
No, that's why I want it to happen.
I don't know, whatever they want.
Yeah, you've got a rogue animator from Netflix who's infiltrated Disney. So anyway, on that note, we're going to take a break and we'll be back a bit more composed and not as insane with some anime. So we'll see you then.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week and do it reasonably well.
Welcome back, and now it's time for some anime, and first up to bat is Mark with something.
Well, put it this way, is if there's something strange in your neighbourhood, who are you going to call?
Bill Murray.
Definitely. Or Claims Direct. But if either of them are unavailable, you will go with The Little Busters. Yes, I have been watching Little Busters. All 26 episodes of them, well, of the first season, because I've realised halfway through this was not the entire thing, and there's like three seasons of this.
Yes.
So Little Busters tell the story of a young lad called Ricky, who previously, a few years ago, lost his parents in, I'm assuming, a horrific accident. It's not really explained. And he sank into depression. And while he was depressed, three other boys and a girl kind of reached out to them and befriended him and cheered him up. So over the course of a few years since then, he's kind of became like part of this group known as the Little Busters. And all of a sudden they realise that this is going to be their last year of school. And as always in Japan, your last year of school means that you will never, ever, ever see anybody, you like your best friends, ever again.
Yes, because they scatter like a flock of pigeons.
Yeah. So because of that, they decide to randomly become a baseball team, because why not? Known as the Little Busters. And it's up to Ricky, usually, to go out and find new members of the baseball team, all of which are young girls. Because obviously that's what you need when you're picking an all-star cast of sports team. But that kind of takes a whole, I wouldn't say a whole, it's always occurring that he's looking for new members. However, the whole of the series is divided up into little mini arcs where he kind of befriends the girl and then they have like a tragic backstory as they always do. And then some weird stuff happens because all of these backstories are completely random and tragic, and they're kind of a little bit unbelievable at times. I think the first one they do is a girl where she has no concept of death because she blocked it out. Apparently, her brother passes away, and it's that traumatic for her. She just blocks the entire thing out, and she just has no concept of death until she sees a dead bird, and then gets proper depressed.
So again, does that mean she thinks her brother is still alive?
Yeah, she keeps having dreams about this man who's reading a book to her, and then it transpires from this elderly man who, I'm not sure, I think he's like her grandfather, who she's never met or she has no idea of, and he tells Ricky that, yeah, it's basically that she's blocked it out, but she's still like, it's still coming through. So obviously she has a mental breakdown and gets all depressed about it. And it kind of repeats, I wouldn't say it repeats that exact thing. Another girl is kind of like, I can't even understand what was happening with it. It was like, she has a split personality, yet the quiet, sensible one is disappearing. Then all of a sudden she's replaced by the energetic, happy one. Apart from Ricky, because Ricky remembers the quiet one, she turns back into the quiet one. It doesn't really make sense. And there's a few other characters, such as one of them was like the daughter of a space pilot, I think, who is from, I'm going to say Russia. I don't know where she's from. She's got a little Russian accent in the dub. At some point, she goes back to Russia, and then she ends up being captive, like in a dungeon somewhere. She does not fall in love with her captors, though. But yeah, the whole series—it was a nice enough series. The dub, which I watched, was pretty cringeworthy at times. There was a lot of characters, I wouldn't say miscast. They were decent enough voice actors, but they didn't do the right voice for it. For example, Masato Inohara, he is like the older brother type character, and he is voiced by Greg Ayers.
Okay.
But they didn't do Greg Ayers in his voice that he did for Nerima Daikon Brothers, where he does like the adult voice. He does his squeaky little teenage boy voice that he did for Full Metal Panic and Heaven's Lost Property.
Okay.
And it's like squeaky little voice for a buff, muscle-head guy, and it's like, no, not so much. Another character, the Russian one, just has the traditional overblown little Russian accent, and it just sounds very cringeworthy the entire time. But honestly, the series, it has its highs and lows. A lot of the little stories, while a lot of them didn't make sense at times, they were quite well written, and it does show a lot of really good ways of how they wrote, like, different stages of depression, like, kind of how, like, your mind will sometimes block out some of the really bad things in life, or sometimes you just, like, for one of the characters, she's, like, constantly abused by her family.
Yeah.
But she puts on a happy face the whole time. And even the character where she's kind of, like, her serious version of her disappears, just kind of putting on a mask where she's putting on the happy mask and all that, and it kind of, it was slightly relatable at times for these characters where they did that. And that was the parts of the series I really liked. Unfortunately, there is a lot of padding in between it, such as the obligatory swimsuit episode, which was just kind of like, that came halfway through the season and I nearly switched the season off. Ultimately, in the end, they don't finish the story off. They have had a little trailer for more of it. So I was just like, oh, yay, more. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of want to see more of it.
Yeah.
It was one of those series, it wasn't completely bad, but it wasn't, I'm not going to rush out and say everybody go watch Little Busters, because it was kind of one of those ones where it was just like, if you watch it and you get into it, you probably will enjoy it, but it's not going to be one of your favourite anime of all time.
Yeah, I kind of got that. I mean, I watched Little Busters years ago, and it reminded me a bit of Amagami SS, which is coming out soon from MVM Entertainment, mm-hmm. in that you had these little character arcs, and it focused on a different girl in each arc. But when I watched Little Busters, one of the things that struck me was how much it was trying to mimic what happened, what Clannad did, but also include little bits from, say, the melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya and various other things, and try and incorporate them. But it just felt like there was too many girls, not enough time.
Yeah, I mean, I did a little bit of looking up on it, and apparently this is like a visual novel as well. So yeah. I think it actually was done by the guys who did
It's a key visual novel, isn't it?
Yeah. There's two. There's a normal one, there's an etchy one. I think this is taking the place of the normal one, so I can only assume season two is the etchy version, which does not sound appetizing whatsoever.
No, I think it's just a continuation of the story.
It might be. It might be the OVAs that's doing it. I know there's OVAs, there's all sorts of things.
They usually keep the fan service-y stuff with these things for the OVAs.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's something I was quite happy about. I mean, apart from the one episode, the fan service in this was pretty okay. It was kind of like the Love Live turn, or Girls and Panda type of fan service, where it's just kind of like cute girls doing cute things as opposed to boobs doing boob things.
Yeah.
But it was a decent enough series. I mean, I'm not gonna completely slate it. I think if I watched it again, I would watch it in the sub.
Yeah.
As opposed to the dub. But yeah, it was enjoyable enough. There were some really good moments, but there was a lot of lots of good moments.
Okay, cool. Right. Moving on to Tucky then, who has something a little different.
Something a little bit more bigger, screeny, and sword arty. So I've recently been down to my local cinema. I say local, it was about 10, 12 mile away because it wasn't at my local. As we've seen these new anime releases popping out on the cinemas left, right, and centre.
But not your local cinema, because...
No, not your local cinema.
Yeah, not your local cinema, because they don't want... your local cinema, they don't want local yokels like you.
So someone doesn't want anime, what we're about.
Well, no, this is the thing. One criticism of that, I mean, before I even get into the movie itself... One criticism of it is that it's not on as enough places, because I had to travel all the way from Sunderland through to the Metro Centre. Yeah, sure, it's like 25 to 30 minutes drive, but this more on my doorstep. I'd like to see more cinemas take part rather than the usual ones, because for a premium seat, even at like on a Tuesday, say at my local cinema, it's about £4 a ticket. Affordable, cheap. And you get a decent same one up. But I've had to travel all the way through the Odeon at the Metro Centre, and I've had to fork out like £10.80 for a seat for the subversion of Sword Art Online Ordnance Scale. ordinal scale?
It's ordinal. Ordinal scale, yeah. It's ordinal.
Ordinal scale. I'll point here. £10.60 is actually less than what I paid for Gateshead Vu for Your Name.
Oh, yeah.
Silent Voice, Yu-Gi-Oh, Ghost in the Shell, and all of the others. That's usually like £12.50.
Well, I didn't get into that one then. But that's Trinity Square, though. That's like brand new cinema. They don't have they don't have a solid fan base. But like I say, it's one of them things that it'll put people off, especially new people who want to see these movies. And I mean, I can completely understand that the cinema charges the prices because the cinema has to get their cut. The companies like MVM, Anime Limited, Manga UK, whoever's putting it on, they've got to get their cut out of it. And then I believe like the original source has to get like a cut of it. So I can understand like the big price.
Yeah.
But when you've got an industry that's really struggling and the big screen, like the whole move from more home video releases to the big screen, it's more of a positive because you can bring in the mainstream audiences. And people will just be browsing at the cinema like, oh, what's that? Oh, it looks like an animated movie. I'll go and give it a try out. You know, just like try and bring people in because home releases, you have to know that niche market.
Yep.
The core audience, you have to advertise to them. Whereas with cinema, anybody on any day will go to the cinema to watch whatever they've got out at the time.
Yep.
And that could be a positive for the anime industry. But hardcore fans having to fuck over like £10.80. I mean, if you say even more, like £13-14 for one screening, when you can consider that on Blu-ray release, it's about £10-15 for the Blu-ray release, and you get to keep the movie and all the extras.
Yeah.
And I think that might be because the screening I went to was actually well attended. There was quite a lot of people in there, and quite a few familiar faces because SunnyCon, like everyone knows everyone. It's like Cornwall, only less less money, but. It's one of them things for going forward with it. I'd like to see like a lower price on cinema admission, but obviously with Brexit on the corner and distribution companies already in dire straits, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Moving forward, I actually went and I sat down. I sat in the fancy big seat that they've got there. It was bigger than my cinema seat. I'll give it that. But got into it and. The movie was subbed because we didn't get the dubs. Dubs, I believe, is getting released in the US. It's going to be an English one because of the whole distribution system.
Yeah.
Because apparently Funimation dubs the anime now, and then that goes to It's a Mystery.
Universal.
And then it gets released over here. I mean, we've seen Universal with the My Hero Academia, but if that's the way that the whole trickle-down thing's going and we're not saying Anime Limited, MVM or Manga, if they're not getting any of the dubs, then that's going to be a huge problem in the future.
Well,
that's a completely other discussion.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I don't think MVM...
It's an issue now. I still haven't gotten One Piece.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I don't think MVM are going to be affected that much because they don't really go for current titles. They wait a couple of years and then get the license for it cheap.
Yeah, I've noticed. I mean, to be honest, there isn't just Funimation out there. I mean, for dubs, kind of, yes, but there isn't just Funimation in terms of the overall thing. There is other series that will trickle down anyway.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're going to hope on. And like I say, it was commented on by what the bloke who was sitting behind us in the Minnesota Vikings shirt. Strange, I can remember that of him. But he was saying to his mate in the previews, like he would have loved to have actually seen the dub rather than the sub version. I think that's just lazy myself because subs are better than dubs in my opinion. But that's an argument for another day. I will get into the movie. It's Sword Art Online, ordinal scale. The Sword Art Online franchise, as you know, follows Kirito and his harem of digital and real girls, where they've all got fascination with him and. This is kind of it kind of links in with the series.
Yeah.
So if you've watched the series, especially if you've watched the beginning of Ninecrad, because that's referenced heavily. There's also like the Gun Gale Online and ALO and other things. It all ties into it, but it's its own individual story. The plot follows Kirito, obviously, and. So there's the new augmented reality headset, like the Nerve Gear, but it doesn't offer like the full the full dive thing, which is, well, actually it does, but that's a later on thing. For the movie's purposes, at the beginning, the Augma, they call it. It's like a little Bluetooth set, which lets you interact with real life.
Yeah.
And it's a scary look at what the future could hold for technology, because usually when you see an anime, you see these new gadgets and newfangled things. But this was the first time that I've ever looked at one and actually thought, you know what, that could be like, it could be out in 5 years. That could be Google Glass 4.0 or whatever they're up to now. Because it looks like an off-cut of it, and the way they implement it within real life.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the gaming aspect. It's the, like, the whole, because, I mean, there's one bit where it goes up to a vending machine that's like, oh, you've won a free coffee from this vending machine for some, you know, little tasks and quests that you can get in real life. Like, oh, if you've walked 10 kilometers or something, here, have yourself a free money off coupon. Things like that. And that's the tone of this movie. It kind of peers into the future, I think. It's a fascinating view into it, but like I say, it's all centralized around the Sword Art Online, the original Aincrad survivors.
Yeah.
And unlike the series, what I like about this is it's not so much heavy on the harem element, which is like a main focus. It's always all Kirito and Asuna, and you've got the rest of like the side cast who are always like, oh, Kirito, I dream about you. Oh, Kirito, I'm going to do something to you in your sleep. That kind of thing.
Sorry, you said, oh, Kirito, I dream about you. For some reason, I went back to like the 1950s and I dream of Genie, but it's I dream of Kirito. And so you have to rub something for Kirito to appear.
Yeah. Technically, yes. But this movie, they've left out the fluff and they've left out the fan service.
Okay.
And it's so much better for it. And I know I really go negative when it comes to the fan service and that. I mean, if you read me reviews, I'm very negative with it. But because it goes back to my whole, like, you know, you can do so much more with characters than just focus on genitalia.
Yep.
Where with this one, they've actually focused on plot. They've focused on a storyline. And the plot is quite good. And the inclusion of characters, it goes in seamlessly with the actual series. And it's something, because the plot is, and there's a spoiler warning on this, is that there's a former SEO survivor. He's working with a father of one of the deceased.
Yeah.
Because he was kind of in a relationship with her. And the father worked for the guy who created Aincrad. So he had the technology. And he wanted to bring his daughter back. And the way to do this was to search through all of the SEO survivor's memories to create this whole game ordnance scale where you can fight monsters in real life and you get points and whatnot. And he sent the monsters after the SEO survivors. And because of the fear and the terror, it set off a signal in the brain, which the Augma device would scan the brain and then send that memory up to a database. And as complicated as it sounds, it all fits together. Then he then maps out his daughter from the memories of all the SEO survivors. But in doing so, the Augma device actually can cause permanent brain damage to all these survivors. And this guy's willing to go that extra mile to kill all of these people just to get his daughter back. So his daughter becomes a ghost in this game. And the story goes from there.
Okay.
The animation for a movie, it's crisp, it's clean, it's really high budget.
Okay.
And same with the soundtrack. Can't fault it at all. It's what you expect from a big screen kind of movie.
Yeah.
My big positive is it just blends in seamlessly. The negatives I have for it are it's not so much the movie, it's the fans.
Yeah.
And I say this, I know that there'll be a few people listening who were in the same theater as me and laughed because there's a part in it where Asuna's losing her memories, like of SEO, because she's been attacked and her memories are being pulled from her, and she starts to forget Kirito. And she forgets like the whole Aincrad episode.
Yeah.
And she's losing everything, all her good memories of Kirito. And these are the memories that really forged the friendship and the bond that these two have.
Yeah.
So she's like lying flat on the bed, Kirito like cuddles into her bosom and he's crying and that, and she's just lying there, and it's a really emotional moment, and everybody in the cinema around me started giggling at it, like little schoolgirls.
Just to jump in a little, Tucky, this happened to us as well. You know Karen Kyokai?
Yeah.
The local anime society at the local university, we did a favour for them a couple of years ago, and we said, okay, MVM are releasing this. They've given us permission for us to screen the first movie for you, just specifically for you guys in your society. So we took it along, and we basically put it on for them. And it got to a scene where Ryogi Shiki, she's fought whatever it is on the roof, and you know she's taken some damage. She's lost an arm, and so she is at home in her Spartan room. She comes out of the shower. She's got a shirt that's half open. She's wearing her underwear, the bottom half of the underwear anyway, and this kind of open shirt. And she's basically trying to open this tub of Haagen-Dazs. So she puts it between her legs, pops it up and starts eating it with a spoon with her right hand because she doesn't have a left arm. Mm-hmm. And all you can hear from the crowd are these annoying little shits who are basically just making all these kind of innuendos about her at that point. And you're just like, okay, she's lost an arm in a fight, mate. You know, there's nothing sexual about this scene.
Of context at the punt to it, and I think that's part of the reason why I'm not really much of a fan of fan service, because it creates that kind of mentality. Like I say, the scene was emotional. She's losing her memory. She's losing the very fiber of that bond between the two of them. And Kirito's lost. He's powerless. He doesn't know what to do to help her. And they're just giggling because he's in her boobs.
Yeah.
It kind of lowers the IQ of the whole room by default. Yeah. And I lost IQ points because I was in the same room as them, and it's annoying. And this is more of a dig at the fandom who watch this. It's because in the series, there's lots of fan service in it. There's lots of awkward angles. There's like, oh, Leifa, oh, she's my sister, but she's kind of like has a romantic thing for us. That kind of thing, which spoiled it. Because that scene on the big screen, emotional.
Yeah.
She's lost her memories. That's it. That could be her life ruined. And Kirito's powerless. I'm just sitting there like, how are? it's not on. And I mean, I'm not there to tell people how to react to things. They can react how they want. They've got free will, you know, but, you know, have a little class.
And you're asking anime fans to have class?
I think it's more like laugh at the bits that's supposed to be funny. I mean, if it was done as a gag, like earlier on, and people laughing, that's fair enough. But because it was the context of the scene.
It's exactly what Tucky says. How many anime have we all seen where the lead has accidentally tripped over and fallen into the girl's boobs?
Exactly.
Yeah, you get like the old red face thing followed by a slap to the face.
Yeah.
And that's fine and well for all that, but this is a big screen emotional moment. And the tone was like put down by that. Like I say, the movie, it's really good. It's worth the admission. I'll give it that. It's worth the admission.
Okay.
And it follows on, and it's for any sort of online fan. And to be honest, I'd like to see the dub now because it gives it another excuse to see what Bryce Pappenbrook can do.
I've got one question about the whole film.
Yeah.
How does it tie in for me, I watched the first half of the first season and couldn't stomach anymore. So, because I hadn't seen any, like, half... Because there's two seasons already.
Yeah.
And I think...
Are you up to... Which part are you up to?
I was, like, literally, I think I watched, like, the first 10 episodes, maybe 11.
Have you seen that? All right. So, you'll be up to... Have they escaped Angkrad yet?
I'm not going to lie. It was when it was airing. It's been a long time. I think the fairies started coming in. Was it the fairies?
Oh, right. So, the biscuit...
All right,
they've escaped Angkrad... But Asuna hasn't made it out. Everyone else has made it out, except for the people who died. But Asuna hasn't made it out. So she's trapped somewhere. Sorry?
Right. My question is, how does this link in for the people who aren't up to date on Sword Art? Could you watch it and kind of get what's happening? Is there a recap or anything like that? Or?
Well, like I say, yes. You can, theoretically, if you've seen them escape from Angkrad, you can loosely tie it in. Because this movie is It's kind of like a direct sequel to that. It has elements of Gun Gale Online. It has elements from the whole Flying Fairies one.
Yeah. Those will be characters, though, won't they?
The character cameos, and that was another negative, which I'll get to, but it's all tied in, but it's mainly around that time in Aincrad.
Mm-hmm.
If you've watched that, then this movie should be fine for you. Another negative that I've got is, right at the end, they make it a big boss fight. And it's a big boss fight, and the boss is the boss that was supposed to be on level 100 in Aincrad, because it's all the old bosses which are showing up, even the creepy skeleton centipede thing. And the way they did it was, the original like group of them, there was about four or five of them, they went in to fight the boss, who's like a level, God knows what, it can regenerate, all looks lost. They've got to defeat this boss, and then out of nowhere, side of the building cracks in, everyone starts piling in. Players from Gun Gale, players from ELO, for no reason at all. Proper sentient thing to it. It's just like, it's the final boss battle. Let's just throw every character into it so they can beat the boss.
So it's the other kind of fan service.
That's the thing, because they've went in, the situation's tense. They've all went into full dive mode on the Orgma to go in and fight this boss. And if they defeat this boss, then they can like save the day. But the boss is way overpowered. Because it's, you know, it's the final boss. It's not because they said Heathcliff was supposed to be the boss.
You know, you mentioned the cameos, Tucky.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll seamlessly cut this in, don't worry. You mentioned the cameos from, like, the later editions. From Elfheim Online, Gun Gale Online, stuff like that. Now, have you played the latest game?
Was Hollow that the Realization one?
Yeah, Hollow Realization.
No, mine was the song one. That was the last one I played.
Right. See, Lost Song was the last one you played. See, Hollow Realization, I had to review that, and one of the first things that I picked up on was one of the characters that you see in Hollow Realization is Mickey. And this is a bit of a spoiler if you haven't seen Season 2 of Sword Art Online, but Mickey actually dies, as in physically dies.
Yeah.
Was it Mickey? Yeah, she's basically the greatest...
Yuki,
that's it, not Mickey. Yeah, Yuki. She dies in the game. They actually have a big funeral and everything. And yet she's a character in... she dies in the anime. They actually have a funeral and everything. And yet she's a character in the game. And the game's supposed to be after the anime. And I'm thinking, what the hell's going on? Hang on, is she dead? She's supposed to be dead.
Yeah, she made a cameo in Lost Song and... Also, there's a little reference, a little flash of her in this movie as well.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice touch because it was like kind of like her spirit was in it. But you'll get that when you see it.
Yeah.
But that's it. Overall view of the movie is it's definitely worth the admission. It's worth to go and see if you are a Sword Art Online fan. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to see more like this in the cinema. And to be honest, like the movie is far superior to the series itself. Continue with that and take that on board and move forward with it and move like this kind of attitude with the series.
Yeah.
And focus more on the plot and less on the curves.
Yes.
Got that.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned the waifu thing. When I was reviewing Hollow Realization, I also had to do Fate Extella, the Umbral Star. And those two games, are very, very similar because they are effectively waifu wars.
Fate is literally a waifu war, isn't it?
Well, no, Fate Extella is literally a waifu war. And I mean that in every sense of the word. It is literally a waifu war. And then you play Hollow Realization and Kirito surrounded by all these girls who all want to rub that bottle that he's got and make him appear.
That's one of the things with the games as well, because there was there's one where you've got to up the relationship meter on it to earn a trophy. And it's like you've got to sit there and flirt with your sister. Kind of creepy.
Yeah, they've got that weird relationship mechanic in Hollow Realization, and I couldn't get my head around it because it's all circles, and I thought, hang on, is this supposed to be Venn diagrams?
I didn't get that. It's like you talk about random stuff, and you don't know what you're talking about, but if there's hearts pop up, it's like, oh, well, it's going good, isn't it?
Yeah. That was literally my attitude as well. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I played that... Valhalla game.
Yeah.
And that is literally, like, it's a bartending game, but the way they described it, like, the actual online website is actually called waifubartending.com.
Yep.
And they kind of used it as a joke, and people got really annoyed with them because of that.
So anyway, on that note, we will leave you for this week, and we'll be back next week with something.
Hopefully we'll be back.
Yeah,
we'll be back with next something week. Solid.
Yeah. Hopefully our net connections will allow us to return.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with more anime and more animation and more cartoons and more of other things as well. If you've liked what you've heard, then you can find us on iTunes, Audioboom, Mixcloud, YouTube, various other places on the internet. If you are listening to us through iTunes or Audioboom, then leave us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think. It does help us improve. If you're listening through Audioboom, then please subscribe and you can keep up to date with all of our shows. We are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, so there's not only Keyframe, there are other shows available as well. So there might be something there that you really enjoy. I suggest 4Panel. Were really good.
Or any of them. Or all of them.
But yeah, until next week then, I have been Rob.
I've been Mark.
I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Bye.